Thankfully, his suit would hide any sign of dampness, even if there was nothing to be done about the smell.
As he'd surmised, despite having told them all to eat without them, everyone was seated with food growing cold on their plates or in their glasses, depending upon what kind of monster they were. Without saying another word, Smith headed to the table with the goblins and Lizaveta, who was frowning at him. He felt something, and a gentle breeze that smelled of Lizaveta brushed his skin. Her face went blank, and then she looked pleased. She greeted Smith with a pleasant smile. Adam sat down opposite Bonarata, with Marsilia on his left and Guccio on his right. There was a warmish, American-style breakfast on his plate, enough food to satisfy a werewolf. If he were to guess, conversation hadn't been going too well while he was gone. Marsilia's mouth was tight around the edges. Guccio looked amused, and Bonarata looked particularly bland.
"Sorry to keep you," Adam said to Bonarata. "Urgent pack business."
"I thought your pilot wasn't back," Bonarata said.
"He isn't," agreed Adam pleasantly, dumping ketchup on his eggs. "But sometimes submissive wolves run into problems if they're around too much violence. Since he is here because of me, he has the right to ask me for help." Which was sort of true. Violence became a problem for most people eventually unless they were true sociopaths, and there was no need to tell everyone that Adam had been the one in need of help. The food was good, even cold, and Adam made his way through the meal with the dedication of a man drained from fighting off a vampire attack. As soon as he took the first bite, other people started eating too. A male vampire stopped by the table and handed Bonarata a note. He read it, frowned, and looked at Adam.
"This concerns the bad news I had," he said. "I sent out word yesterday that my people were to locate your mate and assist her if necessary, and otherwise just to keep watch and send me word."
As opposed to kill her on sight, Adam thought.
"My people have all been contacted except for one, and from him I have had no word at all."
"He is in Prague," said Adam. Bonarata looked at him with narrowed eyes, and Adam knew he was right. "Mercy has this uncanny ability to go where the trouble is thickest," Adam told him. He had decided a while ago that it wasn't deliberate, and that it had something to do with being Coyote's daughter. He was pretty sure that Mercy was completely oblivious. "My wife went to Prague, a city where, my people tell me, there are two vampire seethes in a place that should only be territory enough for one. Hopefully she is safe with Libor of the Vultava."
"You sent Bran's foster child, whom he loves, to Libor of the Vultava?" said Bonarata.
Because evidently, Bonarata knew there was something up between Bran and Libor.
"Do you know what caused the bad blood between them?" asked Marsilia with interest.
Adam had discussed his qualms about Libor with his people, including the secret trouble between Libor and Bran. Marsilia suggested asking Bran himself. Adam had just shaken his head and explained that Charles had told Ben that the secrecy was powered by an oath of silence. Taking their curiosity to Bran would be useless. Bran doubtless knew, Adam had told them, that Charles had told Mercy to go to Libor. If Bran had had objections, he'd had plenty of time to voice them.
Bonarata shook his head. "Libor doesn't talk much. He especially doesn't talk to vampires. He informed me so when I attempted to meet with him a few months ago to discuss why his city had two seeds, one of which no one can pin down, not even the master of the city. I have a few ideas about it." He frowned. "It was probably a mistake to put it off, since the master is no longer communicating with me. We tried him just before dawn, because we couldn't reach my hunter."
"Is the master Prague still Sternat?"
asked Marsilia.
"No," said Guccio.
"Sternat killed himself 70 or 80 years ago. Kosurek took over the city from him."
She frowned.
"I don't remember Kosurek."
"After your time," said Bonarata shortly.
"Is this Kosurek a rebel type?" she asked. "Or is he in trouble? Or is he just away from the phone for a couple of hours?"
"Maybe Mercy did something to him," offered Adam dryly. You can never tell with Mercy. I expect there are buses in Prague, too. Marsilia raised her eyebrow at Adam, an admonishment to behave. Adam raised one back at her.
It is unlikely that Kusurik is away from the phone, said Bonarata.
That is cause for concern, certainly. But anything further than that is speculation at this point.
He didn't sound like it was speculation. He sounded like he was seriously angry about it. Adam suspected Kusurik was not long for the world, but that was Bonarata's business.
I'm sure you will understand, Marsilia said, that Adam is anxious to collect his wife, especially if your vampires on the ground in Prague are not responding. Perhaps we should get on with business. You took Mercy. Why?
Bonarata pursed his lips, took a sip of his wine as if he enjoyed it. Then he looked up at Adam.
You have made a bold move, he said. It was a brilliant move, perhaps, to claim your town as your territory and vow to protect all the people in it. You've made your town a place for humans to come and treat with the Fae and the werewolves, a place where they feel safe. Humans come to see the Fae, and the Fae show their true faces, at least part of their true faces, there. All because you have said you can keep them all safe from each other. It is a happy thing, a thing full of infinite possibilities and hope.
He played with the glass. It looked fragile in his big hands. Then he set it down with a sigh and said,
And when it doesn't work, you are going to spark a war with the humans that has not been seen on this planet since the Spanish Inquisition set off the witch wars. When I was a boy, every village had a coven of witches. Every city of any size had a witch as strong as Elisaveta in charge of it. The humans began it, driving the witches into breaking treaties that had been in place for centuries. By the time it was finished, I thought for 50 years that they had succeeded in killing off every witch-born person on the planet.
The vampire spread his hands, then set them on the table on either side of his glass.
I do not believe that you, a pup not even a century old, can do this thing you claim. Even the Maroc has pulled his support from you, though your mate is this woman you claim is the child of his heart. He waits for you to fail, because if he did not think you would fail, he would join you. You are no match for the Grey Lords. You are no match for the werewolf packs who will move in on your territory because the Maroc no longer gives you the mantle of his protection. You are no match for me.
He gave Adam a sad smile.
No matter how much I wished it to be otherwise.
Adam waited until Bonarata seemed to be done. Then he cut into a crescent roll dusted with raspberry drizzle and ate a large bite. He made sure to chew it well and washed it down with a swallow of water. Point of fact, Adam said, the Maroc broke with us because he thought we were going to step into the middle of a war the Fae were courting with the humans. He needed to keep the rest of the werewolf packs out of that because, as you well know, if the Fae turned their attention to eliminating the werewolves, they'd probably be able to do it before the humans managed to destroy the Fae. He took another bite and chewed slowly. Marsilia said,
The question you should be asking yourself at this point, Jacob, is why didn't the Fae destroy Adam and his pack out of hand? We all here at this table know they could have done it.
Bonarata looked at Adam and invited Adam to answer the question with a lift of eyebrow. Adam swallowed his food.
You are looking at this wrong. You think I hold my territory by might of my fist, but that's not it. I hold my territory by consent of the governed. I think it is a very American concept, which might be why you never looked for it.
He ate another bite in virtual silence. The rest of the people in the room, and there were maybe 40 people here outside of his, seemed to understand that something was going on, and they quieted to hear it. Adam decided that he'd offered enough. If Bonarata wanted to know more, he could ask. This time it wasn't a dominance thing, a power play. This was for keeps. If Bonarata asked the questions he needed answers to, he was more likely to believe what he heard. The sooner he understood how their safe zone worked, and why, the sooner Adam could get into the plane and fly to Prague.
"Explain it to me, then," gritted Bonorata, "who is hampered by being old and European. Explain to me how a single alpha werewolf can dictate behavior to the Grey Lords. To Beauclair, who has the power to level cities. To the children of Danu, who were worshipped as gods."
"Oh, that one is simple," Adam said. "They made me do it." Silence. "He's not lying," Marsilia said. "I'd rather enjoy the show." Adam tipped his water glass at her.
"I'll remember that."
Then he dropped his indolent air and sat forward, all business. When they made their dramatic exodus, the Fae expected to be able to retreat to the reservations and never deal with humans again. 3,000 years ago, they could have done that, retreated to Underhill, and lived happily for as long as they cared to do so. But that Underhill fell and closed her doors to the Fae, forcing them to make their peace with the humans, who reproduce so very quickly, and love the cold iron that is the doom of most of the Fae. Moving to the New World was a desperate move. Revealing themselves to mankind again was a desperate move. Creating the reservations was an even more desperate move. The latter paid off, or so they thought. In the wilds of Western North America, where cold iron doesn't have the weight of history that it has here, they were able to reopen the ways to Underhill and the territories they controlled. Places where cold iron and Christianity had no hold. So, they flipped the bird at the humans and retreated, expecting that they could run from this world. Arrested, Bonorata absorbed that. When Adam started to speak, the vampire held up a hand.
"I have not heard. A moment, please."
Adam went back to eating. Maybe if he weren't hungry, if he hadn't been a soldier, the tension in the room would have ruined his appetite. Maybe.
"They opened the old ways," Bonorata said, "but they did not find what they expected."
Adam nodded. "Exactly. Underhill wasn't happy with them, wasn't entirely sane, and had no intention of allowing them to return and reign in their old, arrogant fashion."
"Leaving the Fae trapped in a cage of their own making," the vampire said.
Adam nodded. They had some choices. One of them was to go out fighting. Even 100 years ago, they might have won a war with the humans, though I doubt it. They have the power, but the Fae just don't have the numbers, and a fair percentage of them would rather kill other Fae first, then go kill the humans. Now, with modern weapons, I don't think it is a fight they can win, and neither do most of them. But the Fae still have the kind of power that could make it a war with no winners. He brought his fists up together, made a quiet, explosive sound, and opened his fists like fireworks. Everybody dies. Some of the Fae find this a very attractive option. Death in the glory of battle.
Bonorata snorted inelegantly. "Morons," he said. "Where is the glory if there is no one left to tell the story?"
"Thankfully, most of the Grey Lords agree with you," Adam said. "They had locked themselves in their fortress. But the Fae are not vampires or werewolves who can live in peace with their brethren."
His wolf laughed at that. "Fae living together in peace?
Werewolves, maybe, if the Maroc were there to bang heads together. Vampires? Still, one must flatter one's host, and the vampires were better, generally, at living together than the Fae were. If they kept their people trapped in the reservations for much longer, they would die at their own hands." Adam only voiced what was obvious to everyone here who knew the Fae. "They were already starting to murder and torture their own out of sheer boredom, I think."
"If they are to return to the world, they have to negotiate with humans again," Bonorata mused. "But now they have thoroughly schooled their hosts in exactly how scary, how powerful they really are. How could they reestablish communications after that?"
He gave Adam a doubtful look, clearly indicating he didn't think Adam was up to the task.
"I don't think you understand just what Adam is to the humans," Marsilia said. "He was a celebrity werewolf almost from the first moment the werewolves came out.
He's good to look at, and he understands how to walk in the halls of power.
he was respected by the military-industrial complex of the U.S. before it was known that he was a werewolf. He was a person trusted by high-level military and political people. So he helped to weave relationships between the werewolves and humans.
Here Marsilia paused to smile wryly.
And then Mercy took a handful of Adam's pack and killed a troll to save the humans. They risked their lives and were hurt in a battle they could have avoided. But they put themselves between the Fey bad guys and the humans and turned themselves into heroes. They are celebrities.
Stupid of us, Adam said, because it gave the Grey Lords an idea.
You are set up, Onorata said, sitting forward.
In a hushed, power-filled voice, he said, They set you up. Set you up to be a hero. Pretended to be afraid of you so that the humans would believe you could make the Fey behave.
Onorata was being surprisingly reasonable for a man who had just lost one of his pets.
Elisaveta had said the collar was almost out of power, hadn't she? And the witch who had made it was no longer working for Bonoranda. Maybe Lenka's death hadn't been as unplanned as it had seemed.
The fact is, Adam said, addressing the issue at hand, no one believes the Fae are afraid of me. Not the Fae. Not the humans. Certainly not me. What they believe, because we have done it, is that we will fight to the death to protect the humans in our territory. But I can tell you that if a Fae steps wrong in my city, I won't have to lift a finger to destroy him, because the Fae themselves will do it for me. We have a treaty signed in blood to that effect.
Marsilia cleared her throat, and Adam thought back over his words.
Destroy him or her, he said. The humans believe that we can protect them, and we can. They are mistaken a little, because they don't know about that treaty, about why we can protect them. The Fae know that the Grey Lords will kill to protect that treaty, and the Fae are afraid of the Grey Lords.
Most important, Marsilia said, is that the humans don't just think Adam and his pack can protect them. They know that Adam will protect them. He is a superhero like Wolverine or Spider-Man.
And it isn't just my pack enforcing order, Adam said. He wasn't a superhero, but he could see Marsilia's point.
It's Marsilia and her seed. It's Larry.
He raised his water glass in Larry's direction, and 20 feet away, Larry raised his in return. It is Elisaveta. He and Elisaveta exchanged the same distant toast.
It is the Fae themselves. I am, for my sins, just the face of that protection to the public eye.
Onorata stared thoughtfully at Adam.
Adam met his eyes and held his gaze. This time, Bonarata smiled, a wide, generous expression that was as honest an expression as a vampire of his age and stature was capable of.
Yes, Adam thought, Lenka's death had been planned.
Bonarata's sorrow had been real enough, but her death at the hands of Adam and his people had been planned.
Maybe Bonarata wanted to use her death to justify killing Adam.
That felt like something a vampire of Bonarata's reputation might engineer.
It had been an accident that Lenka had struck the first blow, and that Honey had been entirely justified in killing her.
Bonarata glanced around the room, and people resumed talking and doing things other than paying attention to Bonarata.
Sound reestablished itself comfortably.
In this semi-privacy, Bonarata said to Marsilia,
Recently, you lost several of your stronger people. If you would leave me a list of my vampires you would trust at your back, I will see who is willing to travel to you.
He paused and said with evident sincerity,
You may account the gift as my endorsement of this idea of your safe zone.
He paused.
Alternatively, you could return here and I will send people to replace you so the werewolves are not left without support.
As an I love you and wish you to return to me, it lacked both clarity and passion, Adam judged. If he'd said something that lame and uncommitted to Mercy, she'd make sure he paid for it. He didn't think Marsilia would be any more impressed by it than Mercy would have been.
Marsilia looked down at the table.
I love you, she said in a very low voice.
You defied me, Onorata said in the same low voice. You fought me. I could not let it go, no matter how much I loved you.
She gave him a hard smile.
You destroyed Lenka and her mate because it was easier than controlling your hunger for her blood. By destroying her, a strong werewolf, you demonstrated that you were still in charge. A very big lie. It worked only because people are willing to believe lies that are big enough. Because you did not want to control your addiction, not really. You enjoyed the power boost the blood of a werewolf gave you more than you recognized the addiction as a weakness that is more than a match for any strength it gives you.
Yes, said Bonarata, without apology.
You loved power more than you loved me, she said. You chose once as you would choose again.
She smiled, and it was tender and sad at the same time.
I know you, Jacopo. I would not change you for anything, but I cannot live here.
She waved her hand to indicate his home, his seethe, Milan, everything.
I am a use for where I am. There are people who depend upon me.
She looked at Adam, who solemnly nodded.
It is then my choice to go back to my home. I will send you a list of people I might trust, and you may do what you wish with it.
Adam finished his food. He glanced at Guccio, who was watching the other two vampires. Guccio had managed the whole meal without saying more than a single sentence. Adam was a very little, disappointed in Guccio, that the vampire was going to do nothing, leaving Adam in an awkward position. Maybe the story Guccio had told about marking Adam had been true, except that he'd bitten him and bound him instead. The marking could be overlooked, as the bite never could. Should Adam let the trespass go if Guccio didn't make a move? Adam found that answer extremely unsatisfying, and so did his wolf.
I regret what I had to do, Bonarata was telling Marsilia in a soft voice.
Marsilia lifted a brow in disbelief, and Bonarata gave a half-embarrassed laugh and spread his arms.
You are right. I needed the power, Marsilia. If I had not had it, we would not have survived.
She made a sound that might have been disagreement.
Did your werewolf blood give you more power than having Stefan and me by your side would have? More than Wolf? You broke him too, Jacopo. He is not safe anymore.
Bonarata nodded. When they saw what I was willing to do, what I could do, they quit fighting me. It allowed me to take the reins here, to keep us all safe.
She looked at him.
Then, my once love, what is it that you regret?
That I could not have just told you what I was doing and why, he said. That I had to hurt you.
She shook her head.
Don't pretend that was part of your plan. You hurt me, I hurt you back. I broke your rules, fed from Lenka, and tried to break your hold on her. I failed in that, to my regret. You punished me for breaking your rules, but my real crime was hurting you. Was daring to tell you that what you had done, what you were doing, was wrong? I know you, Jacopo. You aren't sorry for anyone except yourself.
She didn't say it like she was condemning him, but she meant it. His face lost all expression.
You don't know me, Marsilia. You knew the person I was. And call me Jacob.
Fair enough, she agreed. But I too have changed. I'm not yours through thick and thin anymore. I am not your blade. I do not feel the need to forgive you anything, Jacob. I will never pine for you again. Though I think I will remember you fondly. In a few years, perhaps.
She glanced around.
And if you really wanted me back, we'd have had this conversation without an audience. Having discussed everything that needed to be said, Adam needs to leave for Prague to find his mate. Have we your leave to go?
Bonarata leaned back in his chair, looking at Marsilia. His face was sad and hungry and lonely.
I believe our business is concluded.
Bonorata looked at Adam for confirmation. Adam considered the vampire.
Just to have things clear between us, he said, you know what we're doing back home, and it isn't what you thought. The Fae aren't going to suddenly kill a bunch of humans in a spectacularly messy fashion because it is not in their best interest. There won't be a second Inquisition begun because of us. You are now okay with this and won't send another crew out to attack me and mine.
He took a deep breath and had to fight to keep his wolf from snarling.
If you do, I won't be coming over here on a diplomatic mission a second time.
I am not a diplomat.
Like you, I am a killer. And anyone who forgets that deserves what they get. That said, I am leaving as soon as I can get my crew packed and ready.
Bonorata said very quietly, be careful, wolf. Remember what I am.
Back at you.
Adam,
Marsilia.
Jacob, perhaps we should just agree that matters have been settled.
Bonorata stood up, giving permission for everyone in the room to do likewise. Adam got to his feet, too, tucking his chair back under the table.
Bonorata rounded the table, his path taking him around Guccio rather than Marsilia.
I won't say it has been a pleasure, Bonorata said, but it has been interesting. I wish you luck on your endeavors.
He held out a hand. Adam reached out, and finally, Guccio made his move.
Hold him,
Guccio said softly, sending the command up the blood bond he'd initiated when he had fed from Adam in the hall this afternoon.
12. Matt Smith, who is not the doctor, and Adam.
Water is wet, and vampires are treacherous.
Matt Smith had begun to wonder if Lenka's death or something else had interfered with Guccio's plans. That Bonorata had people waiting to usurp his power wasn't a surprise to him. Werewolves were a little more honest about it, usually, but when a race was governed by the meanest bastard around, one generally had to prove that one was the meanest bastard over and over again. Until someday one wasn't, and someone else got to fight all the time. Matt glanced across the room at Bonorata, who seemed to be giving the goodbye and good riddance speech to Adam and Marsilia. Or maybe one finds someone else to take out one's enemies. Just how likely was it that Guccio had managed all of this without Bonorata's noticing? Bonorata, the Lord of Night, who had been a prince of the Italian Renaissance, seemed unlikely to be the sort of man who overlooked an attempted coup. If Guccio and Adam fought, thought Matt, watching Bonorata carefully not look at Guccio, then Bonorata could not lose. If Adam killed Guccio, he was down one rebel. If Guccio killed Adam, he would be considerably weakened. Matt set his napkin on the table and started to get up at the same time Bonorata and everyone at the head table got up. Adam drew in a breath as the bond between him and Guccio tightened. He wondered briefly how long Guccio had been planning this moment. Wondered if he should kill Bonorata or let Guccio do it, and then kill Guccio. Today wasn't going to be Guccio's day if Adam had anything to say about it. Not because he was a fan of Bonorata's, he wasn't. But Bonorata was the best path to peace for Adam's people. If Bonorata died and Adam was involved, even if only as a blood slave, the same hell that Larry had promised if Adam killed Bonorata on his own would still rain down upon his family. Quickly, Adam did as instructed. Maintaining the handshake, Adam leaned forward as if he were going to do one of those European manly hugs that were so popular on the mob movies he'd grown up with. He reached up and put his free hand on Bonorata's shoulder, feeling the vampire stiffen in surprise and the beginning of a realization that all wasn't well. That Guccio hadn't been talking to some waitstaff or minion when he'd said, "Hold him," that he'd been commanding Adam. Guccio also began to move. Bracing his legs, Adam pulled Bonorata sharply toward him with their clasped hands. At the same time, he used the hand on the vampire's shoulder to push him into Guccio. Surprised by the unexpected impact, Guccio hadn't managed to draw whatever weapon he'd been reaching for, and was trapped momentarily with his hand tangled under his jacket. Adam used that moment to pull Bonarata around and into Marsilia. He trusted Marsilia would hold Bonarata off Adam long enough for it to be clear that Adam wasn't trying to kill the Lord of Night, and wasn't under Guccio's control. He also hoped that she'd be able to keep any of Guccio's confederates from killing Bonarata while Adam was taking care of business. To help that result along, Adam said, "Protect him, Marsilia." And also as he faced Guccio, who was rapidly recovering his balance in all senses of the word, Adam said, "Don't let him kill me either, please." The table erupted in a spray of drinks, crystalware, and dining utensils as Guccio seized the tablecloth, moss green today. The vampire cracked the cloth like a whip, turning the remains of the meal into airborne weapons. A water glass hit Adam in the chest hard enough to hurt, and the pitcher of ice water shattered at his feet, making the footing treacherous. Adam trusted the soles of his shoes to protect him from the glass, but the water and ice-covered floor would be slick. Guccio smiled, showing white fangs. Then, instead of attacking, he began a slow, backward dance designed to keep Adam on the wet floor and allow Guccio to pick his strike. Adam thought the fangs were intended as some sort of threat display, but since they were only slightly longer than those of Mercy's cat Medea, they didn't do much to intimidate him. Guccio had kept a tablecloth in his left hand, gripped lightly near the fabric's center. More interesting was the dagger Guccio held in his right hand. Adam knew weapons. This one was old and well-made. The blade bore designs in bright silver, and Adam assumed it was real silver. He was also pretty sure that the designs were probably a sign that the blade was...
"Careful," Elisaveta called. "There is magic in that dagger, old and corrupted. I can't tell what it does."
Yes, that's what he thought. Probably it wasn't a problem, ensorcelling blades, no matter what D&D had taught a generation or two of young people, was no easy matter. That's why smiths like Z had been so prized and feared. The fight started before Matt could put a word in Adam's ear, and he wasn't sure what it would have been anyway. Everyone else got up from their tables, too. The little healer's people got her out of the room, though she didn't look too upset by the fight, and kept turning around to get a look. And it was a pretty thing, this fight. Matt thought of himself as a peaceful man, but he couldn't deny that there was beauty in violence, a battle between two well-trained warriors. Guccio was typical of noblemen of his era, flash and pretty words that sought to disguise just how dangerous he was. Becoming a vampire hadn't slowed him down or given his blows less power. He had been fighting for hundreds of years, and every moment of that showed, both in his movements and in the choreography that he gave this fight. Adam let Guccio guide the fight while he paid attention to the vampire's fighting style. The most notable thing about it so far was how much the vampire liked to talk.
"How did you manage to slip my leash?" Guccio asked.
He held the dagger low and centered, its tip pointed at Adam's heart. But he was being careful, choosing his strike, because even though Adam was bare-handed, he was still a werewolf. Adam didn't answer, so Guccio found his own answer.
"You belong to Marsilia," he said sagely,
and also incorrectly. Adam, who'd been thinking about ending this quickly, decided that maybe the vampires here needed a demonstration of what a werewolf could do. Bonarata didn't need to believe that Adam could take on a Grey Lord, but maybe he should know that Adam wasn't a weakling either.
"No," he said softly, "I belong to Mercy."
Adam knew a little something about fighting with a blade. The army had begun his education, but he'd had half a century to add to what he knew. The best knife fighter Adam had ever encountered held a knife just like Guccio did. Guccio was the product of an earlier age with all of those years to practice. While most of his attention was on his opponent, Adam was aware that the room had burst into motion as soon as the tablecloth had announced the beginning of the battle. Bonarata had taken control and was ushering his people out of the room as quickly as possible. Matt helped the noncombatants, human, vampire, and other get out of the room. Interestingly enough, Buonarroti was doing the same thing. When they both helped a young woman to her feet, Buonarroti tried to catch his eye. Matt supposed he couldn't help himself. There was always a lot of debate about what advantages the vampires might have over werewolves. Matt had always felt that it was the need most wolves had to establish dominance by meeting eyes. It was handy with other wolves, quite often preventing bloodshed or misunderstandings. But doing it with a vampire was a mistake. Matt's beast was cannier than that. Matt said something to the sobbing woman and handed her over to another woman, and the two hurried out of the dining hall. A vampire who'd been pulling a table out of harm's way bumped into Buonarroti, and the Lord of Night grabbed the other vampire and broke his neck. Reaching out with a casual hand, Buonarroti broke off a chair leg. There was getting to be a lot of broken furniture around, and stabbed the helpless vampire through the heart. A second assassin launched himself from the top of a nearby table, but before he got close to his target, Larry the Goblin, in a very un-goblin-like public display of why one should never underestimate goblins, leaped on top of the diving vampire and beheaded him with a garrote. The body, both parts, dropped to the floor just behind Buonarroti, with Larry crouched on top of the biggest part. Buonarroti spun, already poised to kill whoever was behind him. Seeing the tableau there, the canny old vampire came to the right conclusion and stopped his attack before Harris had to give up his life by being stuck through with a chair leg that would otherwise have impaled Larry. Buonarroti gave both goblins a shallow bow of thanks and turned his attention back to clearing the room of non-essential personnel. Adam's attention was on his opponent, but he was aware when some sort of scuffle around Larry erupted in blood. But Larry was still on his feet at the end of it. Adam had to trust he could take care of himself. One of the diners, a human, passed by Gutcher too closely. He casually backhanded her with his left hand. She collapsed to the floor in a broken heap. Dead, Adam judged grimly before she hit the floor. But he had no time to mourn for a nameless stranger. Gutcher whirled the tablecloth quickly overhead and cast its spreading folds at Adam, and he rushed in right behind it. It was a classic two-pronged attack. Dealing with either threat left one vulnerable to the other. And if Adam tried to move fast enough to counter both, he risked losing his footing. Rather than trust the treacherous floor, then, Adam jumped backward onto the table he'd so recently been eating at. He landed near the back edge of the table. He leaned a little and added a little extra thrust with his legs, which pulled the table over with him on top. He grabbed Guccio's tablecloth and rode the table to the ground, putting the upended piece of furniture between him and Guccio. The vampire leaped into the air like a demented ballet dancer, soaring neatly over the table. He aimed a kick at Adam's leg as he brought the dagger down and a sweeping slash at Adam's neck with inhuman speed. Adam was happy he wasn't human either. He twisted his hips and pivoted to avoid the kick, and snapped the tablecloth at Guccio's blade. The kick missed completely, and the tablecloth fouled the dagger strike so it missed its target, and only sliced a burning line across Adam's shoulder. Guccio's momentum carried him past Adam, and he stopped a few feet away, raising the wetted dagger to his forehead in a mocking salute that claimed first blood. As he stepped back from the salute, he stumbled on an overturned chair and was momentarily distracted. Adam moved in with a strong front kick, but the wolf, catching some motion that seemed wrong, warned him. Adam aborted just in time to avoid being hamstrung when the vampire brought the dagger up between them. The stumble had been a feint, and it had nearly worked. Adam pulled the kick, but had to struggle to control his forward momentum. Gutcher took advantage of Adam's lost balance and used the pommel of the dagger to strike at Adam's head. Adam blocked the dagger, but not the knee that drove into his stomach. It hurt, with a dull pain that built to a crescendo, darkening his vision in waves that ebbed and flowed. Vampires were almost as fun to fight as werewolves. With the room mostly empty, Matt gave himself over to the spectator sport in the center of the cleared floor. Guccio was an excellent fighter, there was no doubt of that. But once in a while there comes a fighter, human or other, so beautiful to watch that he turns the fight into great art, something that Matt felt a privilege and honor to watch. Sugar Ray Robinson had been such a fighter, both graceful and powerful. Matt had seen Robinson fight many times, as often as Matt could manage. Adam Hauptmann was another of Robinson's ilk. He moved no more than he had to in order to avoid an attack. A half inch here, a quarter there. He stayed mostly on the defensive, letting the vampire give away his secrets. Neither Adam's face nor his body gave anything away, and he appeared relaxed and in control. Not a usual sight for a werewolf in a fight against an opponent as good as Guccio de' Medici, from a cadet branch of that very famous family, Matt was given to understand. Harris had been a wealth of information about Bonorata's people.
Hauptmann can fight, said Bonorata quietly.
For a moment, Matt thought he was being addressed.
Yes, agreed Marsilia. He is accounted fourth among all the werewolves in the New World. He is young for such a rank, but this is why it is his.
Adam noted that the room had emptied with surprising speed, keeping collateral damage to a minimum. A handful of observers, among them Bonorata, spread around the room, careful to avoid the combat zone. He trusted they were all people who could defend themselves. One dead innocent in this mess was enough. He and Guccio circled the room, hopping over fallen chairs and discarded tableware. Twice more, they exchanged blows, with neither taking any serious damage. Adam needed to end this decisively, but the vampire's dagger meant that he held that advantage in reach. They circled for a few more seconds, and Guccio slid smoothly into a long, gliding lunge. Fast as a striking snake, the dagger flicked toward Adam's stomach. Only a shift in weight had signaled the move, but Adam leaped back a pace, forcing the vampire to either fall short or commit to an awkward running attack. Guccio, proving he was no novice, aborted the lunge before closing enough to allow Adam to engage. Guccio sneered.
I see you have some training, he said. Your teacher was inferior. Your footwork is wooden.
Me and Muhammad Ali, thought Adam, though he didn't respond aloud. We float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. No one was perfect, and fighting was always one big compromise, but his footwork was fine. Guccio was still speaking, trying to distract Adam with words.
You are too concerned with defense to mount a proper offense. I had expected more from you, the great Adam Hauptmann. Allow me to educate you.
Guccio snatched another tablecloth and dropped it over his left arm. It hung at knee level.
This is the cloak, he said. Its use is to confuse and conceal.
He gave the dagger a quick flourish, moving his dagger hand beneath the cloth.
The dagger hides behind the cloak, he said. And now begins the game. Where is the dagger, and where will it strike?
As Guccio moved, he made the cloth dance in a way designed to lead Adam into making assumptions about his movement and the dagger position. Twice, Adam was sure he saw the beginning of an attack, but the wolf disagreed, reading the vampire's intention differently. Adam listened to the wolf. Guccio moved the cloth in a fluttering swoop, while the dagger appeared in a reverse grip, slashing at Adam's throat. The blade lay backward along Guccio's arm. Most blocks or grabs would result in serious damage to Adam's hands. As it blurred across Adam's throat, the vampire bent his wrist back, allowing the blade to snap forward and take a wider path. Guccio's body was close behind it, sliding in an arc past Adam. Adam jerked his head back. The blade sang as it passed by, slicing open nothing but air. Adam threw a hard jab. He hit, but the fluttering cloth had made him misjudge, and it was just a glancing blow, barely hard enough to make Guccio throw in a short step to regain his balance. The vampire whirled past Adam, discarding the tablecloth. The green woven linen fluttered to the ground to land across the dead woman's feet. As Adam pivoted to face the vampire again, a sharp pain drew his attention to the fork sticking out just under his ribs on the left side. Guccio must have grabbed the fork with the tablecloth and used the cloth to conceal it. Silverware. Real silverware was sterling silver, 90% silver. everything except the knife. Had Gucho stuck him with a table knife, Adam could have pulled it out and expected his body to heal in a reasonably rapid fashion. The fork burned. Gucho grinned at him, then tilted his head, listening. Adam heard it too. The fork had penetrated Adam's diaphragm, allowing air to seep into his chest cavity. His left lung was slowly collapsing, and pulling the fork out would only serve to accelerate the process. Wounds made with silver had to be healed just like humans heal. This small wound changed everything, and they both knew it. Adam backed up slowly, and Gucho shattered him, the vampire's movements lazy. He was confident of his victory. Now that the prey was wounded, there was no hurry. Werewolves kill their prey quickly, but vampires, like cats, enjoy playing with their food. Adam intended to use Gucho's confidence and eagerness against him. He opened the pack bonds. Although the only one of his pack nearby was Honey, she was a deep well of power, and she gave it freely. Her energy trickled into him, cool and refreshing, swallowing pain. Adam continued backing away, breathing shallowly. He angled along an overturned table until he bumped into one of the larger tables, where someone had been clearing the table and left one of those carts with a black tub on top, a tub filled with dishes. Bonarata's people dined off fine porcelain china. The busboy, busperson, had kindly stacked the plates for Adam. He picked up several in his left hand, and with his right, he frisbeed the top one at the vampire. Gucho was less than 10 feet away. Some people might think a plate a poor weapon. Some people weren't werewolves who could launch the things at speeds a major league pitcher would envy. The first plate hit the arm Gucho lifted to block it and exploded, sending sharp fragments of glazed porcelain flying like shrapnel. The impact also knocked the knife from Gucho's hand. It flew, hit a table, and fell to the ground a dozen feet away. Not entirely out of play, but close enough. The second plate took Gucho full in the throat. The narrow edge sliced like a knife, parting flesh, and opening a second mouth that bled dark, viscous blood. The third plate struck Gucho in the forehead, shattering on impact and leaving another bleeding cut with large shards embedded in his skull. Staggered by the rapid impacts, Gucho took another couple of steps back. Blood from his forehead ran into his left eye. He wiped it clear and opened his mouth to say something. And Adam pulled the H&K from his shoulder holster. The first shot took the vampire just below his left eye. A .40 caliber wasn't the biggest caliber in the world, but modern ammunition made the most of it. Adam wasn't carrying target rounds. A large portion of the vampire's head blew outward, fragments of bone and tissue flung 8 feet or more. The vampiric magic that bound Gucho to his half-life didn't give up easily. Gucho wasn't dead. He swayed on his feet with a confused expression on his face. Apparently his high-velocity lobotomy had degraded his thinking skills because he just stood there. The raw tissue writhed and pulsed in the open wound as the vampire's body struggled to repair the damage.
"A gun," said Bonarata quietly.
"Why didn't you shoot him earlier?" asked Marsilia. "You had time to do it after you sent Jacopo to me."
"Because," Adam said, "I needed Bonarata to know that I can defend my territory from vampires without any help at all. Gucho is one of your strongest vampires. He attacked me armed with a dagger, and I could have defeated him with a stack of plates." He put 2 more rounds into Gucho, this time between his eyes. Gucho dropped bonelessly to the floor, face up. There were 3 neat holes and only a little blood from the gunshots. The real damage was hidden from sight. He had been a pretty man, but his features were only visible for a moment. Dead vampires as old as Gucho dry up and turn to ash pretty quickly. The gun just makes things quicker. Satisfied Gucho was permanently dead, Adam looked at Marsilia. "But if I'd used the gun right at the beginning, there would have been 1 less casualty. He looked at Bonarata. "In my territory, I'd have used the gun."
"Why was he fighting so hard?" asked Larry.
"He acted like he actually had a chance. Once Adam saw to it that the assassination did not take place, Gucho was ended. Even if he had taken Adam out, his element of surprise was gone. You wouldn't have let him live.
Buonarroti looked around the mostly empty room and sighed. Besides Adam's people, there were 5 or 6 vampires.
My people, Buonarroti said, how many of you were obligated to follow Guccio while he was alive?
All of them raised their hands.
Raising new children is troublesome, Buonarroti said. You all understand how it works. You collect sheep and tend them, and in a few years, 5 or 6 on average, if you are careful, you will have 1 prepared who can become your child. For that one, you will have tended 12 who, for 1 reason or another, will never live to become vampires. Once you have changed your fledgling for years afterward, sometimes decades and sometimes centuries, you still have to feed them and make sure that they are not misbehaving. Eventually, you hope, they will go out on their own and be able to produce their own children.
I am Bonarata's child, said Marsilia, and I know a few others, but there are only a few of us.
She gave Buonarroti a quick, affectionate smile.
He is too lazy to tend children.
It must have been an old joke, because he smiled back.
We vampires are selfish creatures.
Marsilia completed it by saying,
It is the only reason vampires haven't taken over the world.
Buonarroti said,
Stefan is the only vampire I know who never was tied to his master by magic-driven obedience. I myself destroyed my maker when I decided what I wanted to become. I could not afford to have someone who I would have a hard time refusing.
Wolf had been Bonarata's maker. Marsilia said,
We believe that once a vampire can survive on his own kills rather than needing supplementary feeding from his maker or another master to maintain their humanity, it is time to release them from obligation. When a child of mine quits feeding from me, the tie of obedience fades, though it doesn't disappear.
Usually it can be revived, Buonarroti said.
He looked at Larry.
Which is the logical path for a vampire like Guccio to follow. He could force obedience not only from his own children, but their children too. And through them their children. All he would have to do is feed them from his own vein and they would be his.
He looked around the room, where people, mostly vampires, were returning now that it was as safe as any place vampires' laird could be. While Marsilia and Buonarroti had been explaining things to Larry, Stefan had walked briskly into the room. He looked around, and his eyes found Adam's and ran down his body, taking in the damage. Stefan caught the arm of another vampire and listened to her intently. He turned on his heel and walked back out. Adam figured he'd been sent by Honey, who'd know something had happened but not what. Smith, who'd appeared with a tablecloth that he'd ripped to pieces, produced a knife from somewhere and started cutting Adam's suit jacket off him. Larry said, So your people here, most of them, had to obey Guccio and not you. And you didn't think it was a problem until today? If Guccio had won, he would have turned your own people on you. Buonarroti smiled, but it didn't touch his eyes.
Oh, I knew it was a problem.
And he decided to use Adam to solve it for him, murmured Matt Smith, sounding as though he might admire that. Stefan said,
Being lazy, I expect he had contingency plans, had Adam failed to eliminate Guccio.
He'd returned from a different door, and Adam had missed it. He had Bonorata's healer, Stacia, by one hand. She regarded Adam with big, sad eyes.
It really was a compliment of sorts, Adam, Stefan said, his eyes steady on Bonorata's.
If he'd thought you would lose, he wouldn't have set you up, because then Guccio would have had nothing left to lose, and Jacopo would have had to bestir himself. How did you arrange that Guccio discover that Grigris?
Buonarroti said,
You knew what I was when you brought your friends here. You have no cause to be angry.
But there was a pleased air about the Lord of Night that told Adam he was happy to be discovered. He was proud of the play he'd engineered.
He played us, said Adam.
Marsilia shook her head.
My life is so much more peaceful now that I do not live in your world, Jacob.
She looked at Adam.
He arranged it all, wheels within wheels. What if Gucho had managed to suborn Adam? Did you know, Jacob, that Adam's mate is peculiarly immune to vampiric powers? That she might pass that on to Adam?
No, said Adam grimly. He didn't. Until you just told him. Thank you.
Speech was a little difficult with a collapsed lung, and that wasn't improving with time as air escaped. He decided that he was okay if everyone in the room except Matt Smith thought that Gucho had never had Adam in his thrall. It might keep the next vampire from trying it. Adam's jacket was on the glass-covered ground in shreds. Smith unbuckled Adam's shoulder holster and handed it, without a word, to Harris. He ripped the shirt around the fork, but paused when Adam spoke.
Is she? Bonorata said, arrested.
She turned into a small dog, Lenka told me.
A wild dog. Was it a coyote? Is your wife a walker, Adam? A descendant of coyote?
Fascinating. So Wolf wasn't lying as wildly as I thought he was.
If I had known, I would have kept her longer.
Adam raised an eyebrow. Not likely, he said, and coughed, which really sucked. He didn't want to collapse in front of the present company, so he concentrated on breathing for a bit.
Mercy is slippery, Marsilia said. If you had kept her, you'd have regretted it. I'm sorry, Adam. Even if he didn't know, he'd have figured it out pretty soon. She did something as interesting as escaping his clutches. He would make a point of finding out about her. And what she is no longer a secret, as she kept herself before she joined your pack.
Bonorata smiled.
What he knew, said Stefan grimly, because he had opportunity to experiment on Lenka and her mate, was that a single feeding without consent would never be enough to hold an alpha werewolf. I expect that he took great pains to make Gucho think that werewolves, or a vampire of his power, would be easy prey, without mentioning the little quirk that makes alpha werewolves much trickier.
Unless they are traveling without the packs, thought Adam. He figured he'd keep that one to himself.
So this was a setup, Smith said, returning to his self-appointed job of stripping Adam's shirt. He didn't bother with a knife. The silk was strong, but the stitches gave way to werewolf strength without trouble.
You kidnapped Adam's mate to take care of your little issue with your subordinate?
No, said Marsilia before Bonorata could say anything. He's quite able to run 20 plans at the same time without a sweat. He was honestly concerned that our situation in the Tri-Cities might cause trouble for him. But once we were here, he decided to use one problem to eliminate the other. If he had changed his mind about what we are accomplishing, he'd simply have killed Adam after Adam killed Gucho for him. If Adam had really been caught up in Gucho's play, he'd have killed them both.
She looked at Adam.
He is lazy, but that doesn't mean he isn't dangerous. Gucho is allowed to forget that. You should not be like Gucho.
She looked at Bonorata.
You are getting bored, Jacob.
Interestingly, Adam thought, Bonorata was starting to wince every time she called him Jacob, even though he himself had insisted upon it.
Time was when such a one as Gucho would have been taken care of long before it got this far. You enjoyed playing with him, and that is dangerous. Not just for you, you can take care of yourself, but for those who depend upon you.
Bonorata looked at her.
Stay, my beautiful, deadly flower, my bright blade. Stay with me, please. I need you. You see what I am become without you.
Marsilia shook her head and said, not ungently,
not for all the gold in the ocean or gems in the sea would I stay with thee more.
This is going to be unpleasant, said Smith to Adam, reaching for the fork.
Wait, said Stefan.
Wait, said Adam. Gucho wasn't coming for me. I found him heading for Harris and Smith. Smith should have given Gucho what he wanted, a wolf under his control.
Gucho just needed a werewolf, said Marsilia. Any would do. Then he would cause a war in which the werewolves were the cause of Bonarata's death. If it became known that Gucho killed him, you wouldn't know it, but Bonorata has friends. many nearly as dangerous as himself.
If Guccio and a werewolf tried to kill Bonarata, then Bonarata could retaliate by moving into the Maroc's territory.